It has been some time since the days of Donna Reed, when the American Family was a working father, a mother in an apron, and 2.5 kids playing ball behind a picket fence.
These are the Stones, one of the nicest families you'd ever want to meet. Donna's a worrier, especially about the children. And Donna's worries usually mean trouble for husband Alex. Daughter Mary has the teenager's intolerance towards parents. As for Jeff, he's always his shy, modest, retiring self. You'll enjoy them on The Donna Reed Show.
So if The Donna Reed Show were made today, Donna Reed, if she were average, may not have any children. She might be brown instead of white, and there's a 50-50 chance she would not be married to husband Alex. A Pew Research Center report released Wednesday shows just 51% of adults in the U.S. are now married. That is a record low. And it's even lower among African Americans. Just 31% are married today, compared to 61% in 1960. Joining us now, Los Angeles Times columnist Sandy Banks, who's been writing about this and about being a single black woman in America. Good morning.
Good morning.
Very early morning for you. Thanks for joining us. And Kathleen Gerson, a professor of sociology at New York University, right now researching at Stanford. Good morning to you as well.
Good morning.
So, Kathleen, help me understand these statistics, because I have to ask myself whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. Does it break out differently when you change ages? Perhaps people are just waiting longer to get married.
Exactly. You know, as with any social change, there are always some costs and some benefits. But if you want to look at the good news, what this is telling us is that, especially among young adults, people are waiting longer to get married. They're taking time to get established in their own lives, to decide who they are and what kind of partner they want. And they're holding a very high standard to marriage. They want to be married and to maintain a long-term and enduring marriage. And they want to make sure they find the right person. And in the end, they want a good marriage, not just any marriage.
You know, I waited until I was in my 40s to get married, mainly because I did not want to ever get divorced. I grew up in the 1980s when more than half of my friends had divorced parents, and that did not seem good to me. And Sandy Banks, I wonder if you think that's part of what's keeping women, at least, single in the United States as well.
I'm not sure if that factors in. It may be. But and I'm going at drawing on mostly anecdote and some research. My brother wrote a book about this called "Is Marriage for White People?"
That, yeah, we talked to him about it.
Yeah, the decline among African American women. And one thing he found is that we tend to regard marriage not so much as a starting point as we did a generation ago, maybe, but as one step along the road to a successful and happy life. And it usually in our mind now comes after we have an education, we have a good career, we have all these other foundational things established, where when I was young, I got married at 21, and that was the foundation. You found a partner, and then you built all those other things. And so I think kind of our perspective has changed some. So we look at marriage as the professor said, as a way to satisfy us and kind of an accomplishment, and so it comes further down the line.
That makes it sound like this is a positive development, although the statistics show that married people are better off financially and more stable in their lives.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's a positive thing. I know for me, you got married young, and then you kind of had a bond that helped you to work through all of these other issues. So as you stumbled in your career or you faced challenges, you had a partner to deal with them. And what I see, I've got three daughters now, 26 to 21, and they're kind of working solo, trying to figure these things out. And then when you get there, you know, you find a partner. And I'm not sure that's going to be so easy because, you know, you get older and you get more picky, I guess, and you get more baggage. And, you know, I'm not sure yet if it's a good thing.
Well, you definitely get more picky. I can tell you that from personal anecdotal experience. That's Sandy Banks, the Los Angeles Times columnist. And also with us is Kathleen Gerson, who studies this and is a professor of sociology at NYU, right now researching at Stanford. So, Kathleen, how do we place this into context? I mean, can we put good thing, bad thing label on this particular statistic?
Yes, I guess I would say that positive and negative is in the view of the beholder. And so, of course, what matters in the long run is how well does this work out for you? And that's a different perspective than how does it look for society. But I think to put it in perspective, the reason that this is happening, whether you want to judge it positively or negatively, is that there's is that there are several major changes that have changed the way that, that young adults in particular go about building their lives. The first is that there are growing alternatives to marriage. It's not the only route to family building. And the second is that we are living longer and have more opportunities to postpone lifelong commitments and build our lives in different ways and change those conditions over time. And thirdly, the rise of women's work and increasing equality means that men and women alike have more options, and therefore marriage is no longer a compulsory choice. It's a voluntary choice that we can make, and that means that we hold ourselves to higher standards in marriage. What I think the good news is that we increasingly are looking for what we might think of as the good marriage, the one that fulfills both partners, that's relatively egalitarian, that requires not simply sort of an economic bargain between two people, but really a meeting of the minds and the souls. But that's a much harder standard to reach. It's much more ephemeral. And so in that sense, there are fewer incentives to marry. People can fall back on the option of building their lives outside of marriage. So I think if you look at it from a social perspective, it depends on whether you think that having more choices, even if that means fewer married people, is better, or whether you think that somehow marriage as an institution is better than the other alternatives.
Sandy Banks, a Los Angeles Times columnist, you know, a lot of people point, including your brother, connects the marriage rate, especially among African Americans, to the high rate of higher education for African American women, which is higher, in fact, than the average African American male. Do you think those two things are related, that perhaps going to college leads a woman to delay marriage?
Well, I suspect it is, and I think in black women it's particularly acute because of the imbalance, the disparity between, you know, black women in college and black men in college. And, you know, for a lot of women, that is where you find your mate in college, or that is at least where that you begin to decide what you want in a mate. And if you're in a place where there aren't a lot of men that you think, you know, that you can choose from, I think you're less inclined to get married then. It's also, I think, a function of economics that women, and, you know, this is happening. This is not just black women now. Black women are kind of like the canary in the coal mine, if you want to look at it that way, in terms of the decline of the institution of marriage, because, you know, white women have caught up and are passing, in many cases, white men in college.
Yeah.
And so this same kind of imbalance, you know, it raises a whole host of other issues that, you know, as the professor said, could be good or could be bad, depending on how you see it, and that is, for instance, that the financial equality is parity is here in some groups and is getting closer. And, you know, women are out-earning men, and I think, I want to say something like a quarter of marriages.
But there's still a gap there, Sandy. That is Sandy Banks, a columnist for the Los Angeles Times, and Kathleen Gerson, a sociology professor at New York University. Thanks to both of you. We've been talking a lot this week actually about religion, and especially about Muslim Americans in the media. We asked this rhetorical question: would Denver Broncos quarterback Tim Tebow be as fascinating to the American public if he were Muslim rather than Christian? And you have been pouring in with your opinions. A listener wrote at thetakeaway.org, "The popularity and hero worship of Muhammad Ali and his relationship with the Nation of Islam makes this whole discussion ridiculous." But Frederick writes, "The question of whether or not a vocal Muslim quarterback would be embraced in the U.S. is a rhetorical non-starter. The answer, of course not." You can give us your thoughts on that or any other story at 877-8-MY-TAKE or at thetakeaway.org. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.